RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Thursday morning means money talks here at RCR. Farzan Irani is beaming in from somewhere on the planet, he'll tell us. Farzan, it's great to have you back. How are you?
You're good, thanks, mate. I'm good. From somewhere. Let's leave it at that. I'm beaming in from somewhere.
Somewhere in the solar system.
Yeah. I'm still on planet Earth for now. I haven't used Elon Musk's offer. I haven't taken that up.
You haven't gone into planetary?
Not yet, mate. Not yet. But good morning to yourself and the listeners.
Maybe we'll have to at some point, you and me.
Possibly, mate.
Let's start off with a local story around DTI limits. Finally with us. But apparently we can forget about them for the moment. And the story originates from interest.co.nz. Let's credit that. So just explain DTI again, Farzan, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure, Paul. Essentially, what they're trying to say is it's DTI stands for debt to income ratio. So how the Reserve Bank was late to the party. And they fought for this. And now that it's here and it's been legislated, they're saying, we really don't need to use it right now. Obviously, because the housing market has cooled down with the recent interest rate increases that we've seen, house prices coming down. So they're not at risk of, overblowing the top. So obviously, this is debt to income ratio. And they're saying we don't need to look at it right now. We'll keep it in our back pocket. But some of these numbers still are, to me, are just ridiculous, because I'll read some of this, right? Just to refresh memories, it says the DTI policy allows banks to lend 20% of their residential loans to owner-occupiers with a DTI greater than 6. That's a loan over 6 times annual income. So what they're trying to say is 20% of any bank, Westpac, ANZ, BNZ, they can lend about 20% of their book to these kind of loans, which is, let's say if the income was $100,000, you could lend up to $600,000.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you're kind of in that scary territory. And for investors, it's a DTI greater than 7. So 20% of their book for residential loans to investors, no greater than 7. And the investor segment, I kind of understand. But just think about this. If there's a family with a $200,000 income, they can be given a $1.2 million mortgage. What they're taking into account is 6 times, but they're not taking into account what we've spoken about several times. Out of the first 100, if your salary is 100, 30 or 35% is tax. So they're multiplying that 100 into 6 and saying, okay, that is okay, 6 times that income. But we know what's going to happen is by the time the tax comes out, inflation hits you, you paid all your bills, there's not much left over. In fact, we've been saying people are contributing about, after tax, you've left with 70. People are contributing now 35, 40% towards mortgage payments. So I don't know that this is going to help in any sense, because the train has left the station, so to speak. We're too late on this anyways. And that's exactly why they're saying, it's no good right now. We'll just keep it in our back pocket. If the housing market goes crazy again, we'll use these measures and we'll force this upon the banks to look at that. But we've already seen... Yeah, go on.
I was going to say, when they do the calculation, the banks, do they take into account the net amount or the gross amount?
Well, according to this, it's a gross amount, right? Debt to income.
That doesn't make sense in reality, does it? Because that's not the real figure of money available.
Exactly. It doesn't. But again, then they'll say, but you have 30 years to pay. So we're assuming that your pay is going to go up over the period of time. But at the time of giving you the loan, we'll only allow up to 6 times. Now, I still think this number is pretty high, because your parents would have bought a house at about maybe 2.5 times their annual income. And what this is kind of indirectly doing is saying it's okay that house prices are so bad, so high. It's just a way of justifying that. I can't see any other way out, mate, because it's just ridiculous how they come with these numbers after the fact, after the biggest housing bubble we've had. After 2000s, now this is no good. Even if they bring it in, let's say what they're trying to say is maybe we brought this in. I don't know what they know behind the scenes, what could be coming 12 months down the track. But if they drop the interest rates really low again, maybe they think the financially not so astute people might rush out again and buy homes. So maybe they put this in place for the future first home buyers who don't know much better, put it that way.
Yeah. What happens if your income reduces over that period and you trip over the limit, let's say DTI greater than 6, I mean, you started off with a loan, you were inside the tent, now you're outside it by maybe quite a margin because of circumstances. Many people in Wellington might be in that case now, or in that situation with, you know, reasonably high-paid civil servants losing their jobs and everybody trying to pile into the, you know, smaller, shrinking number of jobs available. They might find themselves outside. I'm just using that as a case in point, outside that DTI limit. What happens then? Do the banks come calling?
I don't think they can alter the contract after the fact.
Right.
This is just at the time of actually taking the loan. It's just another thing you've got to observe, mate, is this is just the Reserve Bank trying to look relevant, saying, hey, listen, we're telling, we're trying to do something, you know, we're the prudential authority who's got to be the big brother to the banks and make sure they're not doing anything unethical. But it's too late, as I said. So they just need to be seen as being relevant. If you think about this, just at the bottom of this article, they show you the debt-to-income ratios in the past. And for Auckland first-home buyers in June 23, that was 11%. That was 11 times. So, oh, great. Now they're saying, now, you know what? We can only go up to about 6. What's the point? And as you said, it's not just about if your income drops below that. What if out of the two people, one person loses their job, which is very likely in today's stagflationary environment, as we're seeing unemployment numbers going up everywhere and downward revisions happening.
And apparently, we heard from a tax lawyer yesterday that liquidations are up big time.
Yeah, that has been going up for a long time. New Zealand, Australia, Canada, America, liquidations, companies filing for bankruptcy. We saw that thing with the buy now, pay later as well. So this is just the start of the trend. As I said, some things happen a year or 2 years before. If you can read the tea leaves, you know what's coming down the track. Same thing happened during the global financial crisis. In fact, I think I've shared with you something about the job numbers, if you want to bring that up, because I want to show the relevance of the job numbers being revised downward globally. It's just a scam. The whole thing is a scam. Governments are lying about the numbers. Labor organizations are being asked to prop up the numbers to make it look a bit better than they actually are. And that's the unfortunate thing. The people who are none the wiser will gobble it up, thinking the economy is doing well, and they'll spend into the economy or living off credit cards and bits and pieces. So, yeah, it is the sign of the times we're living in.
We're talking about debt-to-income restrictions, but also there have been complementary LVR adjustments. That's loan-value ratio. Have I got that right?
Yes, loan-to-value ratio, yeah.
Settings were eased, allowing more flexibility for borrowers with high LVRs. So is there any... So do the two sort of go hand in hand, do they, DTIs and LVRs?
Well, there's, when, from our banking days, right, when you give someone a loan, whether it's business, commercial, corporate, or even a home loan, what you're looking at, your first way out and your second way out. Your first way out is obviously the income. You don't want the client to default because you've given them money that doesn't exist. So you just want to get your interest.
It's that small point, yeah.
Yes, so you just want to make money on the money that didn't exist, and hopefully the client will slog his life out for the next 25 years and pay off the home loan. That's the first way out. You just want them to keep making money, run on the treadmill of debt and pay it off. The second way out of the customer defaults is obviously you've got to sell the property. Now, the LVR is put in place, as we said, loan-to-value ratio. What is the loan based on the value of the property? Now, generally, everyone thinks 80%. But what this is trying to say is they've moved those upwards just to say, hey, we want first home buyers into the market, right? So maybe we'll go to 85 or 90 or 95% for some first home buyers who are really keen because their LVR might be high, but their DTI will be low. So if there's a couple who's earning a lot of money, but they don't have the deposit already saved up, then we let them do this because we'll use the excuse that the LVR is 95% loan-to-value ratio. They only have a very small deposit, but their DTI is really low. It could be sitting at 5 because they're earning $200,000 and they're only taking $1 million loan. So that's their way of justifying it, saying if we move this up and down. But we know with the LVRs, that was okay during the time we've just lived. The last 20, 22 years we've lived, that was okay. with interest rates going up, we've already seen what's happened to house prices in the last 2 or 3 years. And now most bank economists are saying, yeah, we don't think house prices are going to go up much. They'll just flatten out here. I still think they're going to keep going down. So obviously they're just trying to play this game for as long as they can. They need people to come in. You have to have more people coming in to buy it for somebody to dispose it. And the retirement or the baby boomer generation, they're closing in on their retirement years. So mom and dad's in New Zealand and Australia, grandparents who are in their 70s, late 60s, they have a 4 or 5 property portfolio. They've got offloaded to someone, right? So they need these young gullible couples to come in and buy their property. It's like owning your own home. It's a badge of honor, but you don't own it. The bank does for the next 30 years.
Sounds a bit like a, I hate to use this word, Ponzi scheme.
It is. The whole financial system is a Ponzi scheme. Because as I've said, the money doesn't exist. Nor does the bank money exist. And nor does even I was trying to explain this to a client the other day. Right? We say, okay, so do you get all your money out of the banks? Well, you can't get all your money out of the banks, but let's say you took $10,000 or $20,000 in notes out. What happens? What is a note? As I mentioned before, on the New Zealand dollar note, it says the Reserve Bank. So who is your counterparty? It is the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. Just a piece of paper. Let's say it's a $100 note. It's got this beautiful color. Now, let's say if you go to the Reserve Bank in Wellington and you say, I do not want this 100 New Zealand dollar note, what are they going to give you in exchange? That's your counterparty. What are they going to give you in exchange? Another $100 note, or maybe they'll give you two $50 notes. So it is just paper exchange for paper. You've got to understand who your counterparty is. And that is why some clients move towards the age-old money, which is your gold and silver and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. Okay, just to end on that, so that officially now the DTI is part of, I think they describe it part of, and this is the Reserve Bank, part of their toolbox now.
Yep. A little old toolbox that is useless. All their little bits and pieces are gathering rust, as you can see. First they said inflation was transitory, then they increased interest rates, now they've reduced one bit of 25 basis points. Their tools are useless. As I said, the Reserve Bank is not running the show. It's the markets behind the scenes running the show. And the Reserve Bank acts after the fact, whether it's New Zealand or even right now what's happening in America. The money markets, the rates have already gone down, obviously. And that is why you saw the banks, all the banks started reducing their rates even before the Reserve Bank of New Zealand had dropped interest rates. Why do you think that happens? Because they're not borrowing money from the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, so to speak. So the Reserve Bank of New Zealand or any Reserve Bank is pretty much irrelevant.
There's a disconnect there. There's no actual connection. Because the banks are borrowing money, on an international market, not direct from the Reserve Bank.
Yeah, exactly right. The Reserve Bank only gives you the currency, the paper stuff to fill up your ATM machines with. And this is what I'm trying to say, it's an illusion that the Reserve Bank of New Zealand setting the OCR has an impact. That has more of an impact on your currency markets. Just slowing down a little bit, as I'd said, it wasn't my week to speak, but I'd said if the Reserve Bank of New Zealand drops interest rates, look at what happens to New Zealand dollar. The Reserve Bank of New Zealand dropped interest rates and the New Zealand dollar dropped quite a lot. And since then, it's recovered because now the focus has completely shifted to the U.S., and the Federal Reserve dropping interest rates. So the Federal Reserve drops interest rates in September, then the differential between the US dollar and the New Zealand dollar reduces. And that's why the US dollar has been going down and the Australian New Zealand dollar has been going up. So you've got to understand all these little things that happen behind the scenes. And it hasn't even happened, right? The Federal Reserve hasn't even dropped interest rates, but the markets act before the fact and they dropped interest rates. And that is why now the Reserve Bank the Federal Reserve in America most likely will also drop interest rates. As I said, the markets move before the fact in anticipation of what's going to happen because the job numbers in New Zealand were really dire, as we said. Everyone was saying, okay, we have to drop interest rates. So the markets moved ahead of the fact. And then the Reserve Bank goes, okay, we'll drop 25 basis points. And that's what's going to happen in America now this month, September, sorry.
Let's go to the US. Jobs, this sounds like quite a shocker headline, actually. US jobs revised down by 818,000 in election year. Second worst revision. Revision? In US history. What's this revision?
My people who've been listening to us for a while will get this. I said, don't believe any of the numbers they're putting out, regardless of the country. This is all fantasy land that we're living in. They'll tell us not to believe our own eyes. So we've talked quite a few times that the job numbers are revised on a monthly or quarterly basis backwards after the fact when no one's paying attention. And this one is a year to date. What they've done is a one-off. 818,000 jobs were revised back. So essentially they're saying, oh, we got this wrong. We actually created 818,000 jobs fewer in the economy than we had said we did. This is, mind you, on top of the monthly revisions that they've been doing anyways. And this is the second worst, because the last time this happened was in 2009, after the global financial crisis. So what you got to understand is, this is this revision down is 818,000. The worst ever revision downwards was 824. So we're not that far off that. And that was done in 2009. That was after the global financial crisis had already started. And then they said, oh, we're doing this revision because so many people have lost jobs. And this time they've done the revision when they say the economy is doing really fine. So can you really connect the dots and say, yeah, can you put your hand on heart and say the economy is doing really fine if they're constantly lying about the job numbers?
Well, I remember Biden saying proudly, you know, we've created the most jobs ever, or whatever he was mumbling away at. Turns out his figures were totally inaccurate, though he might have been given the wrong figures, I don't know, but he was certainly crowing about them. I guess the question here is, because it's not just the 818,000 figure, as you pointed out, there have been other revisions down. The 2023 down from 230,000 to 130,000. That's still a huge revision down. That's almost half. So do you think this is, and it's hard to believe, incompetence with the handling of statistics by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the BLS? Or do you think there's something more to it? Like these figures were manipulated. And like you said just before, and you've said earlier in our chats, that no one really takes notice of the revision, only the headline, the initial headline, is remembered. But it's pretty hard to forget 818,000, though, isn't it?
Well, it is, and that is why you're seeing certain things happening in the U.S. Economy, and you'll see certain things happen in the markets now as well. But this is the thing, what I'm just trying to highlight is, I've been saying this from the start, is just government bureaucracy. Bidenomics was supposed to be so great. They had the best economy they've ever had. They created so many jobs, and it's all rubbish because the money has been siphoned away into places like Ukraine and all this stuff. The money is really not going to create jobs. It's being wasted, and it's the public sector which gets overbloated. And what you got to understand is, we're seeing that in Wellington now, right? So when the government says enough is enough and we're cutting those jobs, there's a lot of government bureaucracy being cut out. It affects all of those jobs. But the economy would look really bad because the private sector isn't creating jobs. It's the public sector, which is just taking on more borrowed money to get more unnecessary jobs, just to burden down the citizens, whether it's the DEI agenda, the green agenda, or the hassling farmers over this and that. I think in the UK now, if you have one chicken, you have to register with the government. It's getting ridiculous.
Yeah.
But what I'm just trying to say is, this 818,000 was the biggest drop since the global financial crisis. And that was in 2009, when the economy was already suffering. And the monthly revisions also, which we had been, I think we've highlighted the exact numbers in one of our chats. I don't have them right now. But in those monthly ones, 10 of the 11 jobs reports leading into the December 2023 were also revised down. So those were revisions, plus this another 818. So you can clearly see how weak the economy, the US economy, is. And they were saying, oh, we're going for a soft landing. The Federal Reserve has managed this so well. As I said, the US has already been in recession since May. They've just been trying to fake the numbers, make it all look good. And now the truth's going to start coming out closer to election and moving forward.
Does this, though, mean that the Federal Reserve can point to a weaker economy and then potentially support a rate cut, which we were just talking about just before?
Yeah, that's exactly right. As I told you, mate, they've got to tell you a story to do exactly what they want to do anyways. So all this time, now just think about the Federal Reserve in America. Everyone was saying inflation is going higher. And they said, no, just trust us. This is transitory. It is because of the bottlenecks and the supply chains broke down, which was a contributing factor. But they knew inflation was going up and they let it go. So you could say they're either incompetent or it was a nefarious agenda. Now, this time around, they started increasing rates at the fastest pace that they could ever, the fastest pace of interest rate increases. And we saw about in the last year what happened. It was breaking the banks. We had the problem with the UK pension fund crisis and all of that stuff. We've seen so many banks in Japan having problems and all that. So this is a global macro picture. What the US does with their rates affects everyone else. There was only talk of the US maybe dropping interest rates. Their stock market dropped, and you saw what happened with the Japanese currency carry trade, right? Because those interest differentials move. And as I've said before, this is just your hedge funds and all of these things. They are leveraging this. They're not betting even $1 million. They're betting in the billions, okay? And it's leveraged. So leverage is when you're using $10 to bet on $1,000 worth of commodity. So with a small, you might say, oh, the Japanese central bank only increased rates from 0.1 to 0.25. That's nothing. Yeah, but when you're talking the billions, it does hit your pockets.
Yeah.
And what's happened in the US now, and you asked me, and I'm just going to say this out loud, just to see if it plays the way it is, because you asked me about 3 weeks back, was that the big one? And I said, no, it's not the big one. So I might possibly even put my neck out there. They say in what we do, timing is a mug's game, fool's game, because the destination is guaranteed, but the timing might be off because of what games these guys play behind the scenes. But I'm just going to make a slight prediction on the radio. We're going to have a market high over the next, this week maybe. This is not financial advice. I just think, based on what I'm seeing, that this week we'll see a market high in a few things. We've seen gold reach its high ever, the highest high ever. We go up, and then come the first week, second week of September, so maybe next week or the week after, we're going to see some event, okay? We're going to see an event maybe next week or the week after, and you will see a big fall in quite a few things. So this
What would an event be, Farzan? Sorry to jump in. What would an event be?
The event could be quite a few things, but from a monetary thing, see, the simple thing is in financial markets, we say, what the smart money does, they buy the rumor, sell the news. So they're buying, obviously, if the markets are going up, people are saying, okay, the Federal Reserve is going to drop interest rates, which means, hey, the party's back on. Everyone, come on, get your punch bowls out and all that kind of stuff. But what you don't understand is what the smart money does is to buy the rumor, because that's the rumor right now. And as soon as the Federal Reserve drops interest rates, the markets will fall. Now, this, again, as I said, this is a smart money thinking way, because it's already priced into the market. So there's nothing majorly extra good news that can come out. And in the last year and a half, bad news was seen as good news, because everyone in the markets was like, oh, bad news. Unemployment numbers are going higher, economy slowing down, or the war could escalate, which means the Federal Reserve might drop interest rates. So when there's bad news in the markets, it's seen as, in the economy, it's seen as good news in the markets, because it means that the Reserve Bank might drop interest rates. And now comes the point where the bad news will be bad news, because people, the smart money has already realized the job numbers are bad, the economy is bad, we don't even have a president who's running the country, we're on multiple war fronts, all of that stuff. So as soon as the rate cut comes, bad news is bad news, because the Federal Reserve is not dropping it because they feel like they're just having a party. They're dropping it because the job numbers are really bad. They're dropping it because the economy is really bad.
So it's a desperate move, like a move out of desperation.
It is. So what people think is they're not just doing this. If they were really fighting inflation, and if they're going to drop interest rate, that means, tells you, they have access to the information that people like you and I don't have, right? They have like 300 or 3,000 PhDs in the Federal Reserve, the most, but they still can't make a simple decision about interest rates. So what I'm trying to say is, they have data that we do not have. They already knew the economy was really bad. And now this justifies. So this last week, they had this thing called Jackson Hole, where all the central bankers get together from around the world. Yeah. And they, that's when he came out and he said, oh, look, you know what? This 818,000 jobs, we were really, we didn't have this data because we were being told that the economy is doing really well and there were a lot of jobs. So now that we have this data, we just have to look at increasing, reducing interest rates. So now, do you see what I'm trying to say? Is now they have an excuse to go ahead and drop interest rates and the economy is suffering. Now, that could be one of the market reasons, but what I'm just trying to make you also think is look at the macro uncertainty around the world. There's the war fronts going on, Iran and the Strait of Hormuz. Now, they said inflation's under control, but if Iran really attacks, that could be an event because that's a big market sell-off because of the escalation of the war. There might be, and I'm telling you now, there might be a second attempt at Trump's life.
Many people think that could happen.
Yep. Between now and then. And they will, again, they're just going to escalate the war whichever way. So even if Trump wins, he's caught up in this war and that he can't get out of. So they will escalate it to a point where you just can't get out of it anymore. And then because Trump wants to obviously not get the war started, regardless of which war it is. So they might do that. And
regardless of which war.
Yes, regardless of which war, because it's North versus South Korea. There's what's happening in the South China Sea. With the Philippines and all of that stuff with China.
Yeah, it's all over the show. And also, folk will be aware that Russia made a huge strike on Ukrainian energy, the network and the generation system. Now, you can imagine if Ukraine goes dark, no power, that's a big event. That's the whole country got, like, taken out.
It is that, but also, do you remember, I don't know, about a month back, we had that CrowdStrike thing that was maybe a setup for maybe something bigger?
Like a rehearsal?
Maybe.
A cyber rehearsal, yeah.
Maybe. And maybe.
But you think something will happen in September? That's only a few weeks away. That's
well, it's literally, I'm saying maybe next week it'll start or the week after. Where I'm talking about the markets and the drop coming, the panic comes in.
Because we'll look for that.
What I'm also just trying to say is if you think about this, mate, again, there's so many things to do with the just if I compare things to back to the global financial crisis, people kind of understand it, even though New Zealand, Australia didn't experience such a bad event. But in 2008, your stock market, the S&P in the US, was about 100% of GDP. And we've talked about Warren Buffett before, and it's common sense. He's also said, how can a stock market be bigger than the actual underlying GDP? The companies that serve the country or spend into the country, how can that be bigger? Yes, there's foreign money moving around and stuff. But if in 2008, the S&P was 100% of GDP, in 2024, the S&P is about 200% of GDP. It's over 200. That does not make sense, okay? It is all the fake money that's been created after 2000, because in 2000, we had the Nasdaq bubble, okay? In 2008, which they pumped money into the economy and they reduced interest rates. In 2008, that created the housing bubble. When the housing bubble burst, they created more money and took it back to zero interest rates. And now some people call it the everything bubble, because even after COVID, the housing prices have gone up more. There's a stock market bubble and there's a credit bubble, right? Because as we're seeing with commercial properties, what has happened? We talked about a property that sold at a 97.5% discount.
In New York, in Manhattan,
That is not a joke. And just to give some relevance, as I last time I think I talked about Reagan being the president and stuff, the Federal Reserve, as I've told you, central banks create money out of thin air also. Besides the notes, they buy government bonds. So the Federal Reserve in the U.S. in 95 years, from the time it was created in 1913 to 2008, the Federal Reserve, the central bank's balance sheet, rose to $800 billion, from zero to $800 billion in 95 years. And from 2008 to 2024, it's gone from $800 billion to $9 trillion.
How can that? That's just
the money
la-la.
Has to go somewhere. So exactly, since 2008 to 2024, in 16 years, they've added $9 trillion, when the previous 95 years only had $800 billion. This is M1, what we call M1, which is base money supply. Then that money goes into the banks. Banks leverage it, as we've talked about, the 10-to-1 ratio. They then lend that. So M1 is your high-powered money. It's your base money supply that the central bank creates, and then that goes out into the economy and is spent out. So when we talk about inflation, or if Kiwis might say, oh, my house is doubled, literally doubled since 2000s, Yeah, common sense, because there's so much more money. Your house hasn't gone up. It's just everything's gone up because the currency is losing value. And you're not going to get out of this very easily, so to speak.
All right. Well, we're up against time, Farzan. So next time we speak, it should be in the time frame of what you've just been talking about. So that'll be a very interesting chat, won't it, to see what's happened in that time of a couple, 3 weeks, okay?
Yeah. So again, as I said, they always say in these markets, don't make those kind of predictions because timing, no one knows. But I just want to test myself to put it out there. This is not a prediction, not financial advice. This is me reading some of the stuff, and I'm saying around the second week of September, we should see some fireworks starting.
Well, I won't hold you to anything, but no, I think from what I've been seeing, you're not the only person kind of indicating that September could be a very consequential month.
Yeah, exactly, man. And I, the other day I also Googled, when did World War II start? World War II started 1st of September 1939, and it ended exactly on the 2nd of September, I think, 1945. So,
is this 80-year cycle kicking in, the fourth turning or whatever they call it, I wonder?
Well, it's not exactly to the day or anything like that, but September is one of those months you always watch as well. But this also with the election, as I said, there's a lot going on behind the scenes with RFK joining Trump. There's illegal aliens coming in. Yeah. They're trying to vote. So again, this election, as I've said, regardless of who wins this election, obviously my Hillary Clinton one wasn't right. We've understood what's happened behind the scenes and Kamala's been allowed to run this one. But Kamala's agreed to World War III anyways. So,
well, here's what I think. I don't think Biden will make the end of his term.
No, he probably won't.
I got a feeling.
He's going to resign soon.
Or he might kick the bucket. That's possible as well. There's, you know, video of him just in the last few days looking very shaky coming off an aeroplane. There's something that's not improving there. And that means that she becomes the president. If that happens, then what happens? Well,
That's exactly right, right? So they've got to show strength. Maybe he comes off for whatever reason. She comes in just to show for a couple of months that she can run it. She possibly passes a law to make the illegals be allowed to vote. But now only you need a driver's license.
You could even go to, will there be, I don't want to sound too over the top, but will there even be an election? You just don't know. The uncertainty is such that I think you can even consider those things. But I mean, what do I know? But I would just say that. You know.
Yeah, no, you're right. But I think the election will go ahead. That is why you saw the MPOX again and all of that rubbish. And they're just going, people aren't biting. People just aren't biting back, right? So maybe there's a cyber attack or...
Well, what does the deep state do? Let's say that's a real thing. I think it probably is. What does it do when it knows that Kamala can't win, RFK Jr., has slam dunked that, I think. Their assassination attempt, if they were anywhere near it, failed against Trump. And it looks certain that the whole thing is heading towards a Trump victory. And given what he said about dismantling the deep state, do you think they'll sit idly by? I don't know.
Of course not. And this is do or die for them, right? They've got 5 months to do something. So even... So this is what I'm saying. Escalation of war, stock market sell-off, escalation of war, which means now US has to, they'll create a false flag with maybe a NATO country or whatever it is. Who knows, right?
Yeah,
so the US has to join and keep its promise. And if Kamala's in place, she'll run that wartime economy for the next 3 or 4 months. If she loses the election and Trump comes in before he's sworn in, obviously in the next 3 or 4 months, they're still trying to get rid of him in whatever way they can, if you understand what I'm saying. And also, I think on the 18th of September, they have the court case where the judge is going to sentence him. So they might even sentence him and maybe try and put him in prison. And maybe that's what causes the crazy stuff.
Right.
But sometimes it's not knowing which event. But if you follow markets and you follow trends and you follow these little technical analysis and all of that, which I kind of do in my circle. So we know kind of something's coming. We just don't know what. And as I said, if you start a war... that is a market sell-off because people don't like unpredictability, right? So world is not going to carry on as it is. It has an impact on markets, and there comes a sell-off. And as I said, now we're going to stagflation. So when the market comes off, it's not going to be like, hey, happy days, let's buy the dip and get back in. This will be a slow grinding process, working its way down for at least a year, year and a half, and then maybe we'll see what happens. But again, they can't have Trump there, right? Because if Trump and these guys come in, but again, as I've said, doesn't matter who wins, this will be the most contentious election. And it might even, you remember George Bush versus Al Gore, it had gone to the Supreme Court. This one might actually go to the Supreme Court, because if Trump wins, the other side's going to say, we don't believe it. These guys, when people say, how did they win? It's illegal aliens. And this might even be the last U.S. election. That's a prediction for you. Yeah. This is the last 90% of the last U.S. election, because then American citizens will say, the whole process, what's the point of us voting? We don't want to.
All right, that's another chat for another day, that one. Farzan, always good to catch up. Thanks for coming back on Money Talks. We'll talk in a few weeks. And like I say, in that time frame, we can kind of see if anything's, happened in September. So look forward to that next chat. Yeah,
not hoping for it, but it's just something.
Well, neither am I. I just want things to be normal. That's all.
Well, you're never going back to normal, mate.
No.
Just the next 8 years, we just got to ride it to the best we can, protect ourselves and our families, and keep your head when others are losing theirs, as there's a saying. And yeah, if any of the listeners, anybody wants to get in touch, they can get through successsimplified.life. And happy to have a more in-depth conversation with them.
All right, Farzan, we'll talk again soon. Thanks so much.
Yeah, cheers, Matt. Take care. Have a good day.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.